Dr. Rena Richardson. I'm from the University of Manchester and the Manchester University NHS Foundation Trust. My talk today is to cover oropharyngeal candidiasis, which is a rather common condition that we all get to see every now and then. So the objectives for this lecture is to go through what the different presentations of oropharyngeal candidiasis are, and to know how to diagnose and then how to manage it. So just a reminder, what is Candida? Candida is a species of yeast, over 20 of them altogether. And generally we talk about them, dividing them to Candida albicans and non-albicans Candida species. That's based on old ways of identifying Candida, and with the modern technologies, Molitov and so forth, we tend to talk about by species names. They are very commonly found in different parts of the body, normally on skin only if it's moist area of the skin, mucous membranes, the GI tract, and vaginal genital area. Most people actually, if you use very sensitive methods, can be identified, can be found with some Candida species somewhere. The most prevalent causes of species causing oral infections, definitely Candida albicans is the most common one. The other causes are Candida glabrata and Candida krusei. Candida tropicalis also can cause them. And Candida parapsilosis is seen in patients with dentures and other plastic in their mouth. The clinical syndromes that Candida causes ranges from Candida vulvovaginitis, perianal issues, and then Candida balanitis, oral candidiasis, obviously the topic of today, skin and nail infections, and sepsis. The important thing about these is to understand that the further down you go on this list, the more immune suppression is needed. And there is another component, which is the opposite of not being able to respond to infection, is to actually over-respond to infection or presence of fungi, and that's hypersensitivity reactions. And the further up you go on this list, the more likely it is that there is a component of hypersensitivity in it. Now we look at oral candidates in the middle there. It's not typically associated with hypersensitivity, but more some level of immune suppression. The main risk factors are definitely local risk factors. They start from altered local oral flora, which can be altered because of antibiotics, use of narrow spectrum mouth rinses that favor fungal growth, acidic environment, either because of reflux in the back of the throat or having a lot of acidic drinks and foods. High carbohydrate diet, obviously, sugars, more sugar you have, the happier Candida is. And in line with that, poorly controlled diabetes or undiagnosed diabetes. Smoking causes non-specific immune suppression, sort of lazy leukocytes, and is a risk factor for oral Candida. And it's important why the oral hygiene is an important thing. Is also because oral Candida is always a biofilm infection. The mouth is the only part of the body where you have non-shedding, non-renewing surfaces, just like lines and plastic devices, where biofilms form very rapidly, and those are the teeth, obviously. So mixed biofilms on teeth is the issue about it. Then there are more specific risk factors that come additionally. So it has to; these have to do with the immune responses in the area. So you either have systemic defense mechanisms being impaired, or the local ones. Systemically, you think infancy generally is seen as a immune compromised state because of the immune system is still learning. Diabetes directly affects the immune responses. Malnutrition is an issue. But then, of course, you have straightforward immune suppression, which can be primary immune deficiencies or something which is acquired because of medications or like HIV. Locally, the immune defenses can be impaired in the mouth because of lack of saliva production. This is a very common complication for many medications, blood pressure medications, sleep tablets and similar. Or with age, everybody's saliva production decreases. The other common risk factor is that people use all sorts of steroid inhalers for their asthma. And if you take them inappropriately, you get a high dose of steroids in your mouth. And that is a risk factor. Obviously, radiotherapy or any other cancer therapies is a risk factor. So why do we worry about oral candida? The main issue, of course, is that the symptoms can be debilitating. It can impact nutrition. Mouth is sore. It's impossible for the patients to eat acidic fruit and have a balanced, good diet. But obviously, the lesions are a potential route of invasion for candida and other microbes. And there's always a risk for developmental resistance when you have biofilms informed, whatever the reason, whatever the infection is that you're treating. So what does thrush or candida look like? There are four clinical main forms. So the pseudomembranous candidosis is commonly called thrush in some parts of the world. Then you have the erythematous candidiasis, which is atrophic version of it. Then you have a hyperplastic version, which is candida leukoplakia, and then different versions that have to do with the corners of the mouth, dentrous stomatitis and others. So the pseudomembranous type is the classical type where you have white plaques that can be generally wiped off, and when you wipe it off, you find an angry mucosa underneath. It's red, it can be oozing, it can be sore. There should be some level of soreness there in the mouth. The patient, just white plaques alone can be considered almost colonization. So there has to be some symptom beyond just presence of white plaques. Normally they are on the tongue, it can be palate, it can be cheeks, typically palate and tongue. And a classical form of this is the thrush we see in infants, but other forms are there as well. And particularly if you are immunocompromised with poor control of your acids in the stomach and you get acids up and you're immunocompromised, the combination of that gives you chronic esophageal pharyngeal infection with very clear white plaques. Another form is erythematous candidiasis, which is very different from the white plaques. So you don't have to have white plaques to have candida in your mouth. They can be completely absent, like in this figure here. So in erythematous form, it's a more chronic form. It has already, the infection has invaded the tissues a little bit. There are no superficial plaques anymore. And these are quite sore generally. And patients say that particularly eating almost any food or hot drinks or anything will burn. More seen in patients with chronic risk factors, as it is a chronic condition. There is a specific form sort of known as a medium rhomboid glossitis on the tongue, midline lesion, that is a typical form, but that should be always considered that it can also be a bacterial infection. So sometimes requires combination treatment. Hyperplastic candidiasis is a tricky one because it very much looks like leukoplakia, which is one of the most common dermatological findings in the oral cavity, and it's basically the same white plaques as we saw previously, but they just can't be scraped off. And these equally are associated with chronic risk factors, recurrent trauma, and they're mostly on the cheeks or the palate, but rarely on the tongue. And the important thing about these is that this is sort of classified as potentially malignant condition, and can lead to development of squamous cell carcinoma, need to be followed up and treated appropriately. And then we have these corners of the mouth versions. So this is normally something that happens when the in edentulous patients with a lowered bite height, because the dentures have given in and there's a tight groove in the corners of the mouth sucking saliva in there, and skin is not mucosa, it's not supposed to be wet all the time, and when that happens you start getting cracks and infection with both bacteria and candida from the mouth. Younger people, you kids particularly, you would not see this unless there is some underlying condition, immune suppression caused by treatments and so forth. And in children particularly, it's often associated with a mixed infection, lots of licking and sucking of lips and trauma to the lips in combination with the other risk factors. So the important differential diagnosis for oral candidosis are definitely all sorts of hypersensitivity reactions, allergies, contact dermatitis, and so forth. But I have to keep, particularly with the hyperplastic version, I have to keep leukoplakia in mind, and then of course squamous cell carcinoma. Herpes could be sometimes look like thrush, yes. Lichen planus is the most common problematic one. So lichen is the absolutely most common dermatological condition you see in the mouth, and it causes these white plaques and white striae, can definitely look like hyperplastic candida, and it can be sore, and to confuse the person trying to do the diagnosis, it can be colonized with candida. So if you do a swab, your candida, it is positive for candida, but it's not thrush, and it's important to see both, that you may need to treat both. Herpes infections, really, herpes are water-filled blisters that break in the mouth very rapidly. You rarely see the blisters themselves, but you should be able to see those ulcerous spots and tell it clearly from candida infection. After those ulcers, similarly, are very sore but very defined little lesions with the red area around it, the halo sign. So how do we diagnose oropharyngeal candida? It's heavily clinical, so there has to be, the clinical signs have to be there. So there has to be soreness, there has to be an angry skin somewhere, angry mucosa, red lesions and covered with white plaques in most cases. And microbiological diagnosis is important, but a positive swab doesn't mean it is oral candida. It has to match with the other things. Microbiological diagnosis builds on microscopy, obviously culture, and then susceptibility testing. Biopsies can be very useful in trying to think of the differential diagnosis and the level of inflammation and invasion of candida, telling colonization from invasion. How to take a good sample for culture from the mouth. The best is to use a sterile spatula and gently scrape the surface, whatever plaque, whatever area you want to sample, and you can spread that on a glass slide and have a look immediately. You can stain using this protocol, or you can use that what you collect on that and put it on a swab and or send it to the lab for culture identification and susceptibility testing. In the direct smear, what you should be seeing are candida cells, blastospores, and pseudohyphae. Very rarely, particularly in superficial infections, do we see proper hyphae with candida. So it's pseudohyphae, basically elongated buds. Culture is useful, obviously. You can tell the species and you can do susceptibility testing and Zaporodo agar is the preferred agar. Biopsies can be useful also as a sample type for culture, but obviously mainly for the actual histopathological examination. And you can see the invasion if it's present. So how do you manage these infections? It definitely the number one thing with any patient is always to do partial if you don't address those. Then you have to choose the appropriate antifungal agent and give it at the right dose and at the right time for the right length of period. You have to think of the alternative diagnosis or additional diagnoses that have to be there that need also managing, and then think of prevention. So how do you address the underlying conditions? Biofilms are, again, number one thing. You have to improve the oral hygiene. You have to talk about brushing teeth and keeping the dentures clean, if such, or orthodontic appliances, whatever the patients have in their mouths. If there are some like tongue drooly or similar things, people may have occasionally, those equally have to be, the hygiene is important. But good management of the underlying diseases and conditions is very important. And that means also thinking of sugar intake, sugary drinks particularly, repeatedly feeding candida, sweets, cakes, all sorts of things. Or if you're diabetic, definitely having a good glycemic control of that. You should avoid wearing dentures at night. And very important thing is to start taking your inhaled steroid using the spacers, not shooting it into your palate or tongue, but inhaling it properly to your lungs using the spacer, and then rinsing your mouth afterwards. You have to think of vitamin deficiencies, and if they are present, then of course those need to be addressed. Smoking cessation is very important and need to be mentioned to everyone and guided on that if smoking. And then of course, if there is reflux disease that hasn't been addressed, you need to address that as well using proton pump inhibitors if that's appropriate. Why do we need to disrupt the biofilm? Well, number of reasons, but the most important one is that drugs penetrate into biofilms poorly, but even more importantly, the drug targets are not active in biofilms. Protein synthesis is completely different than a biofilm. And therefore, biofilms end up being the incubators for resistance, and treating biofilm infections with antimicrobials alone leads to resistance. Mouthwashes that are active against candida and bacteria can be very helpful in this, in the oral cavity. This is just a summary from one of our publications. See, it looks like a rather messy thing, but actually when you start following case by case, it makes a lot of sense. But if you start from the left, how do you manage a patient who's completely immunocompetent, no problems in the background? If their oral hygiene is good, you can choose almost any systemic or topical treatment. There is no worry about that patient. But if they have a poor oral hygiene, you start with improving oral hygiene and see what happens. That alone can get rid of the problem. However, if the patient has otherwise okay, but their mouth is dry, it is not appropriate to use systemic antifungals as the only target, because you don't get good levels of drugs in the mouth. If there is no saliva, that's the way the drug gets into the mouth. And then if there are large erosive lesions, you have to think about it. On the other hand, if the patient is immunocompromised, and you know that, normally we recommend combination of treatment with systemics and topicals, just to target it from two ways. And those patients often have persisting risk factors. They will need courses after courses after courses, and you're even more so worried about resistance. So you have to think of the biofilms, you have to think of targeting with, for example, nystatin oral solution and fluconazole to avoid resistance. So the benefits of the two sides, how do we think of them? So topicals and systemics. So topicals are mainly favored because you get really high local concentrations of drugs and risk for resistance using such high levels is lower. And obviously, with most of them, you get very little absorption from the GI tract. Examples are nystatin oral solution, amphotericin B oral solution may be available in some countries, or the lozenges seem to be coming back again. Excellent options. And of course, topical azoles, miconazole and other azoles, gels and so forth are available. Generally, these topicals have very few drug-drug interactions because they are not absorbed, excluding the azoles. On the other hand, systemics, you generally need a bit higher concentrations than you probably would think because of you need high concentration into the saliva to resolve the problem. And if you have a dry mouth, obviously that's not going to work, no matter how high your doses are. In immunocompromised, that's the way to do it. Fluconazole, itraconazole, posaconazole are licensed for this. If needed, there are IV intravenous options that can be used for all of those. So I'm not going to go into detail about the dosing here, just reminding you of the miconazole gel or similar azoles are available as topicals. And nystatin oral suspension from the Polyene group is a really good option for children and neonates as well. Oral fluconazole is an option, but probably not commonly used in outpatient setting. Whereas then when you go to older children and teenagers, you have similar sort of similar drugs available, but then your doses go up and maybe tablets are more easily seen as an option. If your patient is immunocompromised, you would start with you have to think of something, you have to have that systemic component, and fluconazole is definitely the preferred first-line treatment. Because it's so well tolerated, there's flexibility of the dosing. You can go up with the dose quite a lot without any side effects, less drug-drug interaction. So it's a easy drug to use in that sense. It has to be combined with the topical treatment in this patient group. But if the patient doesn't respond to fluconazole, my recommendation is that you do then at that point need to have susceptibility data, because the question is, why doesn't the patient respond? Is it because there is not enough drug in the mouth so that the mouth is dry, it's not getting there? Or is this a case of resistance? So if you only grow fluconazole susceptible isolates, you should stick to fluconazole and find other solutions to the problem. But itraconazole obviously is an option, and many times when you lose fluconazole, itraconazole still may work. Again, you may need slightly higher doses, and if this is now immunocompromised patients, you have to consider drug-drug interactions and potentially therapeutic drug monitoring on if you need to use for on long term. You should expect a response to treatment in a couple of days, maximum 5 days or so. We normally advise to treat for 2 weeks, 10 to 14 days. It's just because that's the packet you have to prescribe. Practically, the advice is that you continue treatment for at least 2, 3, 4 days after resolution of symptoms. Just provide enough for the patient. But the relapse is very common in patients who have persisting risk factors. So that can be poor oral hygiene, or it can be poorly controlled diabetes, or poor technique of taking their inhaled steroids, or of course, untreated, undiagnosed HIV. So if those risk factors are there, of course, it comes back. It really is about managing the background conditions. So, what do you do when you have a case of which is unresponsive to oral candida treatment. So the question really to ask is it actually a case of no response? Or are we talking about partial response or maybe short-lived response? And how you approach that is completely different. So if there's absolutely no response, you have to think of resistance, obviously. Or alternative diagnosis. Maybe this is not thrush at all. Maybe it is actually lichen, which is just where Candida is a colonizer. On the other hand, if patient says that, yeah, it helped me quite a lot, but it came back immediately, or so, then you have to start thinking of the risk factors that they are persisting. The biofilms are there, or it can be a case of chronic mucocutaneous candidiasis. So, how do you manage resistant organisms? I would say that based on susceptibility testing. So, ideally, you have susceptibility testing available. If not, you can try increasing the dose of fluconazole. As I said, the safety window for fluconazole generally is a bit broader than for any of the other antifungals. And you can try oral itraconazole, oral posaconazole suspensions for both of those. For longer periods, but these are really only used probably in immunocompromised patients. Amphotericin B oral suspension is available, as seem to be the lozenges again. If in patients, you can consider echinocandins like caspofungin or amphotericin B. So CMC you should start thinking and considering it in patients who have persistent oral candida that comes back, and it comes back and normally responds nicely to the treatment, but it comes back. And they typically have not just oral thrush, but also they may have it in their scalp, in their fingernails. In young kids, it can be that it's just because they're sucking their thumb and it affects the thumbnail because of that. But even so, even that thrush is common in young kids, in infants, you see a nail invasion very rarely. So if you start seeing it outside the mouth, that's a big alarm to think of other things. It's important to diagnose this because it affects, there can be some genetic factors that require other things to be addressed in the patient other than just the fungal infection. But also it helps you to make a understand that you have to have a lifelong plan for the patient to treat their candida because it's going to be there with them throughout their lives. The maybe one nice side about CMC is that it very rarely disseminates, so you have to worry about that. How do you prevent this happening is it comes down again to the oral biofilms and oral self-care. It sounds a bit, I'm repeating myself, but it unfortunately is the cornerstone. But it's important to know that actually in quite a lot of patients, we can stop thrush happening by just improving their oral health care. And what they can do themselves doesn't require any professional input. And rinsing the mouth after using steroid inhalers and using a spacer. When the device is advised to do so. Of course, if they have HIV infection, you treat that. You guide them to smoking cessation. And the last resort really is prophylactic antifungals, which are completely acceptable in certain patient groups, immunocompromised patients undergoing chemotherapy and so forth. Obviously, yes, they need all the support you can give them. But in other patient groups, you have to really think if the risk is just dentostomatitis, prophylactic approach, you only get resistance. So need to think of the bigger picture and the how long you intend to treat. So that was the sort of summary of what I wanted to get through to you today. So better idea, yes, it's all sorts of species can cause it. You need to really diagnose what the species is because different species have different antifungal profiles. But if, as in most cases, it is Candida albicans in most cases responds really well to standard treatments you can think of. And as long as you get rid of the risk factors or control them as far as you can, it should stay away. Thank you.